Welcome to Discover Your Talent, Do What You Love, number 198. I'm creator and host, Don Hutchison. Every day, I interview someone from around the world who has discovered her talents to do work she loves, to create a life of success, satisfaction, and freedom. Today, I'm delighted to bring you our featured guest, Heather Ann Havenwood. Welcome, Heather.
Thank you, Don.
Are you using your talents doing work that you love?
Yes, I am.
All righty. Well, we're here to hear about the whole story. Heather Ann Havenwood is a serial entrepreneur and is regarded as a top authority on internet marketing and business strategies since marketing her first online business in 1999. She's also the author of Sexy Boss, How the Empowerment of Women is Changing the Rulebook for Sex, Money, and Success, and The Game of Dating and How to Play It, a rule book for divorced men stepping back into the game. Heather, that's a pithy summary of your career. Tell us what you are involved in now that has you engaged and excited, if you would, please.
Sure, absolutely. Thank you for having me. Right now, I'm focused on building a couple businesses. I have a supplement business online, as well as the, I call the dating business, where I help men communicate and talk to women, and what I call track the love of their life. And then I also focus really mainly on coaching and working with entrepreneurs on how they can make more money online. Mm-hmm. I've been doing online marketing for a long time. I actually have a master's degree in online marketing, believe it or not. I was one of the first ones to do it in 2013. Yeah.
Who offers that degree?
Full Sail University out of Orlando.
Oh,
it's
sure.
An amazing university. Yeah, yes. It's great. Actually, I was one of the first groups to go through their it was a master's degree in internet marketing. So I officially have that.
People, that's wonderful.
Yeah. Thank you for that. It was a lot of fun. But I'd already at that point been online marketing for many, many years. My big focus right now, I think, is kind of in an interesting standpoint or a turning point in my life where I've been building, I'm still building, but I'm now kind of what I call turning and wanting to help more people, which has been kind of a shift. I've heard that along the way in life, listening to mentors and listening to coaches, and there'll become a point in your life where you want to turn and help other people. But I had a hard time believing that because I was still in that, I'm trying to survive here. You know, I'm trying to build here. I'm trying to breathe here.
Yes.
I can't help anybody. I'm trying to breathe, you know, so right. It's a nice place to be. I wouldn't say I'm at the end of my road, but it's definitely an interesting place where I'm at, where I'm turning around and say, hey, I want to help as many entrepreneurs as I can. I feel like I can now.
Yes. Wonderful. Well, we're going to hear all about that.
Thank you.
Well, as you know, everyone's life is composed of a series of turning points. Some people call them passages, and we face obstacles and opportunities and choices that determine mm-hmm. the course of the next 6 or 7 years of our lives. Take us back as far as you want to in your storyline and tell us about the more memorable and impactful turning points in the life of Heather Ann Havenwood.
Well, I'll tell you one that when I tell the story, people don't really believe me, but it's actually true. When I was younger, you know, in my young years, 6, 7, like that, I was actually extremely shy. Most of my beginning of my life, 1, 2, 3, 4, I was a really a quiet baby, as they call it, right? Mm-hmm. And somewhere around the age of 6 or 7, I was too quiet. You know, I actually didn't speak. So I was behind in the world of communication with kids and at the time. And so my mom put me in speech therapy. And so from the age of 7 to 14, I was in speech therapy twice a week. People always look at that. Like, what am I? Now I'm in the speaking business, right? I'm mm-hmm. out there. I'm coaching. I'm speaking. I've been in the speaking business actually since 2001. And it's kind of this ironicness because I also from Texas and I don't have an accent. And that's because my speech therapist would not let me have an accent. So it's just an interesting kind of dynamic where looking back, I really was kind of slow in the world of communication as a child. I didn't speak much. And now that's all I do. You know, I speak yeah. and communicate and coach and write.
Yes.
And I also failed writing, like an English class a few times. A second grade, I failed spelling. You know, it's just kind of ironic.
Yes.
That everything turns around and where I am in life today.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Kind
of go, huh, that's weird.
Yeah. Yeah. That is interesting. It does have an irony to it. Well, what happened along your educational path?
Thanks for that. My parents got divorced when I was a young age. And because of that, I went back and forth between Texas and Florida. And as I grew up, I went to three different high schools and then I went off to college. And believe it or not, again, I think I've failed more than I've succeeded. I really believe that. And what happens is I think I go after something and then I just fail really hard. Mm-hmm. And then I kind of go, okay, that's not it. You know, and I go somewhere else. Okay. Because I went to my first university and I failed out of my university my first semester. And then my next semester when I went off to Florida, because I was being punished by my family to go to Florida, which I find ironic, then I got straight A's. It was just kind of this, you know, I think we find our place. That university, the first one, just wasn't a fit for me. Mm-hmm. And I'm kind of one of those people, I'm all in or all out. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what I've done in life as an entrepreneur. But that's happened so many times. I've also not only been failed my first semester in college, I've been fired from more corporate jobs than you could probably shake a stick at. Mm-hmm. Because again, it's like I go into a place where I'm a round peg in a square hole. You know mm-hmm. what I mean? Because I feel like that's where I should go. Like that first university, that's where everyone was going. It was like the place to go. So I just said, well, I'll go with the crowd. Mm-hmm. And every time I went with the crowd, it never worked. So I failed out of my first semester. And then all of a sudden I went to a university that made sense to me. And I made straight A's.
What did you measure in?
So I actually ended up getting a degree in, I made it up. Believe it or not. I'm no kidding. I made up my degree. It's called Interdisciplinary Studies of Focus on Telecommunications and Web Design in 1999. And I took my first internet marketing course in 1999, that semester actually. I had a professor at the time. She was a marketing professor, took a course from her because I had to. And she kind of pulled about 20 people aside and said, hey, the university's given me the go to create this internet marketing course. Online marketing course. And it's my first semester. I'm only allowed one time to do it. And then they're going to reevaluate the course. You do get credit. Do you want to come on? I'm like, sure, I get credit. That's all I cared about, right? Do I get credit? Yes. Mm-hmm. So I did my first online marketing course in 1999, right before I graduated. And that's when I created my first online business plan and business in 1999. So it's kind of interesting. It is fascinating, but I actually, believe it or not, I did not start that way. I think one of the worst things we ask our kids today in 18, 19 is what are you going to do with the rest of your life? Like that, I hate that question. I really hate that. I still don't know what I'm going to do the rest of my life. I mean, but at the time I was pre-med. I was a pre-med major. And how did you go from pre-med to marketing? Quick story, because I think it's really relevant. I was pre-med. And doing what pre-meds do, you know, biology and organic chemistry and all that fun stuff,
right.
Not doing that great in it. I mean, I was getting by, but I wasn't excelling necessarily, I would say, like loving it at all, not loving it. But I thought, well, that's what you should do. Become a doctor. That's successful, right? Mm-hmm. I had the opportunity to follow doctors around. They call it shadowing.
Yes.
And I did it as much as I possibly could. Well, there was one particular guy that I'll never forget. I don't know his name, honestly, but amazing man. He was the chief, I guess they call it chief resident or chief doctor of the ER of this private hospital. My job was to be there in the ER from 7 p.m. to 7 a.m. on a Saturday night. And my job was to literally follow him around and not say a word. And I did. But there was a moment. And he looked at me and goes, hey, I need you to stay here in the nurse's station. Don't leave because I'm responsible for you. I said, okay. He goes, I'll be back. So he left, probably got about half an hour, came back, walked right up to me. And he says, I don't know you. I don't know why you're in med school or looking to go to med school. I don't know why. But I will say this. If you want to help people or make money, you're going into the wrong business. If for some reason you like science, great. But he goes, well, how are things are going today? You're making less money and I can't help these people. I'm tied. And he just like walks away. And I'm like, whoa, well, that doesn't sound fun. I'm not in love with science. I mean, it's okay, but it's not something I love.
Right.
And at that moment, I went back and I changed my whole degree, everything. Because I felt like this is not how I want to live my life. He was miserable. I mean, he just kind of had this look in his face of like he felt so tied and restraint. And I thought, you know, I don't want to live my life in a restraint. mm-hmm. by somebody else's rules. Mm-hmm. I want to do something that I can help people. And then, that I do want to make money. So what do? What I do is just what I call get out as fast as I possibly could and get into the real world. And that's
yes. Isn't it amazing that he was transparent enough and open enough to share that? It'd be interesting to know what caused him to do that.
He said, you know where I've been? No. He said, I've been in the chapel. So he went to the chapel for half an hour and then came back and said that to me in the nurse's station. And I think there was obviously, for whatever reason, there was something going on with him. And this, yeah, remember, this is 98, 99, 97, Clinton era, a lot of changes going on in healthcare. And now it's really changed.
Yes.
But I mean, even then, that was a big change. And there was a lot of changes going on with doctors at the time. And so that was the beginning of that. And I think it was kind of a foreshadowing.
Yeah.
And he really helped me because I'm really glad today I'm not in the medical business.
Yeah, it's a totally different ballgame. What happened next? What was the next event?
I finished my degree and I actually got into corporate America and did the big corporate America thing. And I did very well, actually, in corporate America. I was outside sales and I became number one in the country at the time. And it was Southwestern Bell. This is kind of dating me, but cell phones. I was actually selling cell phones, the big phones, like the big bag phones.
Oh, listen, I remember. My ad agency introduced them in the Southeast. Yeah, you had that.
They're awesome, right?
Yeah, it's amazing. The flip phones, right?
Right. They were like way better. And actually, I came on board when we were in that transition with the consumer of trying to get the consumers off the bag phones and into the digital. And we had a hard time selling. I lived in Texas in Fort Worth, and we were on the outskirts, because if you go 20 miles, you have a huge ranches. I mean, huge ranches. And they were really our customers for these bag phones, the construction guys, the ranchers, the farmers.
Right. Right.
And they would come in with this digital phone and they would throw it against the wall. I want my bag phone back, and we knew that it worked better. We just couldn't tell them that we knew it worked better. We had to go, someone go get his bag phone, before he hits everybody. It's kind of an interesting time, foreshadowing of cell phones. So I did that. I actually became number one in the country. Literally, I was by numbers, you have beat everybody. This moment was my first, what I call, how does this happen? I got fired. So I'm at the top of my game, I thought, in my world, it's like you work well for a company, you make money for them, they love you, they give you more money, and they rise you up. That's what I thought how it worked,
Mm-hmm.
Well, that doesn't work that way. I got fired. Literally, like the day after I got my award. And I was very confused by that for a long time.
Yeah, what was the reason?
Looking back, there was a couple things going on. I didn't do well in the politics of corporate world. So I would just do my thing. And my boss and I didn't necessarily get along, but I thought, what's the point? I'm making you money. Why are you upset? Like, I just do my thing. I'm kind of a lone ranger that way. I do what I think is best. And I didn't play what I call the corporate politics and team play. I didn't know how to do that play in that world. And what I didn't understand also is I was more expensive. You know what I mean? So because I had hit all the tiers, if someone came in and purchased a product, they had to pay me 10 times the commission versus like a newbie. So there was a lot of things going on there. And so they just fired me and I get it. But I also didn't fit in the corporate world. This is a big company. I mean, Southwestern Bell is it's massive. And I didn't do well in the corporate structure. When they let me loose, I was great. And so that's why I think I'm 100% unemployable. You know what I mean? And I find it interesting now because, of course, I went back to corporate America a few times throughout my life. And every single time I would get what I call lovely fired, where they would, my last one, they brought me in, the manager and general manager and whatever, brought me in. They go, like, Heather, we love you. Like, we think you're amazing. You've actually did really well for us. But you don't fit in the corporate mold. You know what I mean? And they kind of mm-hmm. laughed at me and I laughed at, and I said, I get it. And then actually one of the bosses actually reached out to me a few years later and said, hey, I'm going on my own as an entrepreneur. Can you help me? Because I am an entrepreneur. At the end of the day, I want to create my own trail. I want to build my own life and I want to build a business that I love. And I don't like having someone saying, you can't do that.
Mm-hmm.
That's fine.
This is a good point to bring us back to the storyline. Very fascinating story. Thanks for sharing. You've read the statistics about how most people don't get in what I call their sweet spot. They don't, mm-hmm. they're not using their talents and their skills and their abilities and they aren't in sync with their values and their own personal vision, the majority, the vast majority. So what do you think that's about, since you've just uttered the words you like to create your own trail and create your own vision? Why can't people do that more readily?
Oh, I'll tell you why.
Okay.
I have the exact reason for that. They're afraid of failure. And we're taught, I mean, think about the schools today, even back then when you're six, it's like, follow the rules, don't break the rules. You know, get A's, don't get B's, don't fail. You can't fail second grade. You have to stay in second grade if you fail second grade, you know, or third grade or fourth grade. How many times you want to do fourth grade again? You want to do it once. Don't fail, don't fail, don't fail. And then all of a sudden you get out of college or high school or whatever it is. And then it's like, okay, now go fail.
Yes.
What?
Yes. Yes.
I've just been taught for, you know, 16, 15 years, never fail. And now you're telling me the way through life and success is to fail my way through life. And really, honestly, it's true. I mean, relationships. How do you learn to have a loving, amazing relationship as you fail through one? You know what I mean? You try. Mm-hmm. You try. You don't know really what you're doing. I mean, there's no necessarily handbook of having the perfect relationship. You just put it all in. You know what I mean? And that's how business is. You just go in. You just don't really necessarily really, really know. You can do research all day long. You can potentially think that everything's going to happen right. But at the end of the day, Steve Jobs, he failed a lot.
Yes, he did.
He failed a lot. You have to look at the big picture. He failed more than he succeeded. People don't really see all that. A lot of failures. People told him he was failing. You know, you had to push through that. And as an entrepreneur, I failed a lot. I've been through bankruptcy. I've lost everything. I've had businesses that I launched and it went nowhere. You have to be willing to fail. And I think today, from the current millennials and people coming out of college, they're scared to death to fail. They're scared to death to just take a chance.
Mm-hmm. I think you're right. I agree with you. What would you tell them to do? What are some tactics you would share with them?
It's a good point. I would, simple, go fail at something.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, anything. If you are great at baseball, go become a football player and find yourself literally tripping over everything. I mean, literally put yourself in a position where you don't know you're going to do well. Good example, last year, it's been a year and a half now, I took improv classes and on accident. The whole reason I did it is because I didn't know what the heck they were. I didn't. I was like, I don't even know what they are. I literally walked to the first camera. I don't even know what I'm doing here. I don't even know what this is. I don't know what improv is. No clue. I ended up taking a whole year of the classes. The whole point of improv is to fail. And they say, like, you have to be willing to fail. Whatever you say, you're failing all the time. And then you make your failure right. So you'll say something. It makes zero sense. And the other person goes, okay, you're right, but you failed, but you're right. Like, that's the whole point of improv. That's the whole point of entrepreneurship. So my advice to people is go do something that's really different than you've ever done before and go learn how to fail. Football players are great at it. NFL players are good at it because they throw the ball and it's always hit. Mm-hmm. It fails. Mm-hmm. Swimmers. I mean, any athlete is really great at that conversation called failure. Mm-hmm. But most people today who are not in some kind of like major sports, they don't like it. They fail once, they crawl in a hole.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not sure. I mean, I think my advice is go do something and just really fail really big.
What have been the aspects of your life deploying this strategy of following your gut instincts and not being afraid to fail or just being afraid but facing it anyway? What have been the most positive benefits to your life?
I had a coach. The answer is a coach in my life. I've always had a coach in my life. It was actually around the age 26. I think I called my dad one day in total panic and kind of one of those, I don't know what to do with my life, Dad. What do I do? You know?
Sure.
And it's not working out like I thought. I'm not a millionaire and I'm 26 or something like that.
Sure.
like, this is not working. I laugh about it now. I call him, he dumped me. He fired me. he fired me as his, you know, as the dad. He's like, you now need to get a coach. And in my world, he was dumping me. Like, your job is to be my father forever and tell me what I need to do with my life. And he's like, no, I can't be responsible to tell you what you need to do with your life. You need to figure that out. And the best way to do that is through a coach. Third-party person who literally is there to listen, to figure out, to help you find your way. And so ever since then, I've always had a coach. Always. Okay. I've had what I call life coach, personal coach, however you want to call that, someone that does not tell you what to do. It does not advise you. It doesn't like a consultant. It's more of a listening, like, well, what is it that your gut's saying? And it taught me how to listen to my gut and listen to my higher self, to listen to, no, this is really what I need to do. So a coach, honestly, has been probably the biggest gift I've given myself. Pretty much had a coach ever since I was 26.
Have there been, I hear that, and I think it's a wonderful strategy, and I agree with it wholeheartedly. Have there been books or other resources that have been useful to you? And
Of course. Yeah, a lot of mentors or mentorships that people that have passed away and they've left their books here, people that are still alive, people that are not. I've had a lot of mentors and coaches along the way, but I would call, a mentor is somebody that you either hear their story or you listen to their books or whatever, and you learn something from the conversation, right? I mean, yes. Anybody can be your mentor. A child can be your mentor. It doesn't have to be what I call someone who thinks they're a mentor. Mm-hmm. I think one of my biggest books that I still, what I call reference daily, mm-hmm. is it's called The Game of Life by Florence Scovel Shinn. It's an interesting book. It was written years ago, I think in the 20s. She was a...
How do you spell Scovel Shinn?
Yeah, Scovel Shinn. I can look over here in my book. It's over here. Shinn is S-H-I-N-N.
Okay, Scovel Shinn. Okay.
Yeah, so just type in Florence Scovel, S-K, or right, S-C, right. Pop up. She's been around a while, meaning her books are, but she was in the 20s. She was a female,
yes.
Which she was very successful as... They consider her a healer and a philosopher. Mm-hmm. I think today she would be way bigger than she was at the time. Mm-hmm. But what she did is she talked about the power of success, the power of intention, the power of your words, what you say you create. She taught through stories. So all of her books are about a story. And she lays out like what I call the game of life, like, and how to play it. Mm-hmm. Literally like rules. And she actually correlates the rules to biblical rules.
Hmm.
And it's pretty fascinating because no matter what in my life, I always go back to that book and I'll pick it up and I'm like, oh, I broke that rule, you know? And it's like, oh, well, I got the consequence of that, you know? And the game of life, and I like that analogy. It is a game. Entrepreneurship is a game.
Yes.
And if you look at how games are played, football, if you're baseball, whichever game you are attracted to, it's a game. There's an intention. There's an element of sportsmanship. There's an element of drive. But the end of the game, it's a game. You learn. You move on. You keep going.
Right.
You know, you don't die because of the game. You just learn from the game.
Yes.
If you could look at life as a game, it's a lot more fun and not so dramatic.
Yeah, exactly. What about this amazing thing called the internet? How do you use it?
That's a great question. So I look at the internet as a medium. It's just a medium of communication and a medium of advertising, okay? And mediums have changed over time, you know? Before the internet, we had this thing called TV only, and then billboards and newspapers and things like this. And they were new mediums of communication over time. And the internet, of course, is a new medium, and it's exploded how we communicate. But the best part of the internet that I think is the way it flattens the ability, meaning if you can understand how people buy and think as human beings, and then understand how the internet, what I call, works, meaning how things are get communicated, then you can sell and create any kind of business that you want.
Mm-hmm.
I love Uber's story just because here in Austin, they're what I call fighting with the city, which I find funny. But Uber's amazing because they understand the psychology of people.
Right.
And they understood that they have two customers. They have the customer that needs transportation right away, okay, and they need it fast, they need it now. They want a clean car. They want a nice person that they can talk to. And then the other consumer and the real hero, I think, is the people that works for them, the independent mm-hmm. contractors. Mm-hmm. And they're creating these amazing entrepreneurial stories where they're giving people control of their life. Like, hey, you can work for us whenever you want, whenever you want, whenever you need. And you can create as much money as you want, whenever you want. Like, there's a freedom there that they can then go create other businesses. They have a whole new world called Uber Entrepreneur or something about stories about how entrepreneurs are using Uber to make money. And then in their off time, whenever they want, they're actually building other businesses. That's the power, I think, of the internet. That's been able to happen because of an app.
That's right.
It's amazing. So I think it's flattened the way that we conduct our lives and conduct businesses. I think the real hero is all the stories that Uber's helped other people create other businesses, create commerce.
What are you proudest of?
A couple things. I have a dog. I love my dog to death. She's the love of my life.
What's his name? Her name?
Lady.
Lady?
Lady. Yeah, she's the, when I was going through my bankruptcy and foreclosure, I lost my house and lost my everything. It was like literally me in the car, my truck at the time, and my cell phone and my dog, you know? So she was there through everything with me. She's lived in a lot of places because of that. I think that. And the other thing, at the age of 40, my 40th birthday this past June, I decided to do a figure fitness contest for NPC, which basically means I get in a tiny little bikini and I get on stage and I walk around in heels, ask people to judge me on my 40th birthday.
Oh,
so
word.
I did that. It was a huge accomplishment for myself. I love fitness and I just enjoy it in general. But I think it was this kind of turning point where on my 40th birthday, I'm getting this tiny little bikini, I'm getting all tan, and then I'm asking the world to judge me based on my body.
It was
kind of like this, wow. I had to really let go of a lot of stuff in my head to be able to do that, you know? Just judge me on my looks and my body and my smile, and I say nothing to you, and that's going to be challenging for me. So here we go.
Oh,
across the stage we go. That was a huge accomplishment.
Wow. Congratulations on that.
Thank you.
Well, Heather Ann Havenwood, what a great pleasure having you with us today. We so much appreciate you sharing the highlights of your very fascinating journey, and so open and honest. And I know that listeners have learned lessons that will help them on theirs. So how do those listeners connect with you?
Thank you for that. Thank you for the opportunity to serve you and serve the people here, because that's really what I think it's about. I think we share stories to help others.
Yes, yes.
So heatherhavenwood.com. Welcome to check that out at sexybossinc.com, sexybossinc.com. That one's really geared towards women in my book. I think I'm very proud of that book because it was the first time, it was like my coming out party of really sharing my true story of mm-hmm. what was really going on in my life mm-hmm. and how I went from someone who was extremely shy to someone who can stand up and say, no, I really am proud of myself and I'm proud of what I've done and I want to help other people. And I call that a sexy boss.
Call
coming to their own.
Yes.
And I feel like I'm finally doing that, as coming into my own and finding my flow of what I'm really good at.
Yes.
And I'm finally getting that after wow. many years of bumping up against the wall. So I think that's what a sexy boss is. And I try to help other people become their sexy boss, like whatever that is for them, like who they need to be to help others in the world and to become great.
Yes. Wonderful. Wonderful. I couldn't applaud that effort more. It's much needed. I look forward to reading it. Listeners know that you can go to discovertalentpodcast.com, click on podcast, look up the Heather Ann Havenwood link and find the overview of this fine interview as well as the links that she's just described. I want to thank you, listeners across the world, for joining us today. As always, you can also subscribe for free on iTunes and Stitcher. If you like the content, we'd love for you to be a part of our tribe and tell us how we can serve you better. That's why we're here. In closing, every one of us is born with unique talents and gifts. We don't learn them. We cannot ignore them. They're just a part of who we are, our DNA. Whenever we discover them and use them in our lives and careers, we do not merely survive. We thrive in every way possible. So until next time, all my best, and whatever you do, have fun out there today.